You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Outdoor Edge in their complete lineup of knives and game processing kits. These guys right now are doing an absolutely huge giveaway where you could win an elk hunt, and not just any elk hunt. We're talking about a 7 or 8 mile horseback ride into the backcountry. We're talking a one-on-one guided hunt. You're going to be sleeping in a wall tent, and you're going to be doing that for 5 days with the founder and CEO of Outdoor Edge, David Block. Now, if you've never been on an elk hunt before, I'm telling you right now, go sign up for this, because if you ever hear a elk bugle, whether it's at 400 yards or it's at 40 yards, it is a life-changing experience. So here's how you enter. Go to OutdoorEdge.com. There's going to be a big banner for it somewhere on their homepage. All you have to do is click on that. Go fill out some information. I think your name, your email address, maybe some other stuff. And that's all you have to do. That's how you are entered. They're going to be picking a winner, a ways from now. So you have plenty of time to enter. Go visit OutdoorEdge.com. Sign up today. And if you decide to purchase any products from the website, enter the discount code NATION30. That's the word NATION with the number 30 after that. No spaces. NATION30. And you will receive 30% off your purchase. This is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Vortex Optics. What's up, everybody? Welcome back. Hopefully, all of you guys are tagged out or working on becoming tagged out or have gotten the buck or are trying to fill your freezer or whatever it is that you're trying to do. I am sending good vibes out to you that you are getting the job done in whatever state that you're hunting, whether that's the South, the Northeast, the West, right here in the Midwest. There are still a lot of guys out there grinding, or some guys honestly haven't even started their rut vacations yet. And man, I'm really pushing for all of you guys to find success. But we're going to take a quick step away from the rut hunting strategy and tactics that we've been covering the last couple episodes. And I want to focus a little bit towards the conservation side of things. And that's why today I brought on Nick Penizzato. He is the CEO of the new organization between the National Deer Alliance and the Quality Deer Management Association. And they formed this new organization. And he was on a while ago where we talked about, when it was first announced, but now they've come up with a name, and you'll hear what that name is here very shortly, or you could just read the title of this episode. But it's an episode about what's going on, what's happening within that organization right now. This is a really quick episode. It's about 30 minutes, so a little over 30, and I wanted to keep it short so you guys could quickly consume it and then get back into the rut hunting strategy and tactics. But I'm telling you right now, man, this organization is going to be doing some awesome things, because I think what they're doing is they're taking all the positive things from the National Deer Alliance and all of the positive things from the Quality Deer Management Association. They're mashing them together. And now we have this new organization that is really going to be white or deer focused, not necessarily just whitetail focused, but deer focused, and the laws, the rules, the regulations focused as well. And we got the blue collar guy, and we also got the white collar guy, all fighting for our right to hunt, fighting for the herd health, the resource itself. And when you get all of those things kind of mashed together, it's just a win-win scenario. So I'm hoping that you guys enjoy this episode. I don't want to take up too much of your time today. So we're going to do a quick commercial. Vortex Optics, man. They're around my neck every hunt, my binoculars, whether it's out west, whether it's in a tree stand, whether it's for elk, mule deer, or whitetail, or even when I was up in Michigan. the spotting scopes when I'm out in South Dakota and out west. The binos come along with me everywhere. I beat the shit out of my equipment. And when you beat the shit out of your equipment and they still continue to work, that's a big thing. But let's say you beat the shit out of your equipment a little too much and they break. Well, the Vortex warranty allows you to turn those back in, whether you break your rangefinder or your spotting scope or your binoculars. You send it back into them, they fix it, and then they send it back to you for free. There's no charge. So it's almost like you always have a new pair of binoculars on standby. And I've had to use that warranty 2 times on my Vortex binoculars. And I'll tell you right now, they come back working like a brand new pair of binoculars. So not only is the warranty very important, but the people who work there are participants in the activity. So whether it's, you know, the people who love rifling, right? They love shooting their guns, or guys like me who are straight up hardcore bow hunters. They make equipment and they market to that crowd because they are that crowd. So you can call them up with a question and they're going to know what you're talking about. It's just not someone looking in a handbook trying to figure out the best possible answer to your question. The guy or gal who sits there and answers the phone does what you're doing and will be able to find an answer to whatever problem you have. So customer service, awesome products, awesome warranty. And it's just an awesome company. And it's a win-win for not only the company, obviously, because they make great products, but for you, the end user, because it keeps you a lifelong customer. And not enough time to tell you all the good things about Vortex Optics. So if you're in the, if you need a spotting scope, a rangefinder, binoculars, rifle scopes, red dots, whatever, go to vortexoptics.com. These guys have a ton of great optics for whatever you need. Vortexoptics.com. And now let's get into today's episode with Nick Penizzato. In 3, 2, 1. All right, on the phone with me today, Mr. Nick Penizzato. Nick, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Dan. Good to hear from you as always.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I tell you what, I am sitting here tagged out. My buck tag is full here in Iowa, and there's a little part of me who wishes it wasn't full. So, because I'm seeing everybody out hunting still, and I'm back in daddy daycare mode.
I know that feeling. The chase is always seems to be on in your mind. Like, you always know, even when you tagged out, there's another deer out there you were watching or another setup you wanted to try. And it's sort of this empty feeling, but I got to remind you, Dan, I believe you still have a Michigan tag.
That's the best joke I've heard all day. Here's a funny story, though. The last morning walking into my Michigan hunt, I didn't know this until I got back to my truck, but I dropped a hooded sweatshirt full of, and that had my tags zipped up in it. And I always put that hoodie up on when I get to the stand, and I get back to my truck and I'm just like, oh, where'd my hoodie go? Where'd my hoodie? It had my tags in it. And luckily it was the day that I ended up leaving. But so somewhere on some Michigan public land, there is a Sitka Apex hoodie with my tags and license, Michigan tags and license in it. So,
well, that's the kind of move that that I would do. I'm just clumsy and forgetful. As a matter of fact, and I know Ozonix is a sponsor of yours, and you and I had a conversation before I bought one. When I left the tree this morning, the tree I intend to go back to this afternoon, I took a look back to see how my back cover was, and there's my Ozonix still up in the tree.
Oh,
and I thought, you know what? I'm just going to leave it there, and if someone comes and finds it, good for them. So there you have it.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. There's been a couple times where I'm doing some run and gun move. I get up there. I saw a big buck or I saw some deer movement, and I'm just strategizing in my head as I'm taking my tree stand down for the evening or for the morning. And I look up in the tree. And I'm just like, oh my God. And my Ozonics is still up there running. So what do I got to do? I got to put the whole tree stand back up again and try to, you know, get it down and bring it down. So I think we've all, I think we've all been there before, some of those brain fart moments.
I think you're right.
So how has your rut been in PA so far?
Well, this morning, and I'll give these in order of appearance, I saw a spike, a 2-point half rack, and a 1-point half rack. So they kept getting smaller. I can only assume that the next deer was going to be a button buck. But, you know, it's I don't mean to pick, because there are some good deer around. There are a couple that I've been watching for a while. And you know how the rut is. You just have to, you have to be patient. You have to put your time in, and they have to cruise by you.
Yeah.
And so I don't mind the young buck show. I just enjoy being out there and getting the fresh air and participating in it. So
yeah.
But it's good. It's to the point that cold front that you just had that come through the Midwest hit here last night. We had an all day rain yesterday, and so I really feel like the next 48 to 72 hours is going to be key for us here.
So are you hunting on a piece of property like that's public, or is it private? Have you had trail cameras out this whole year? Is there a specific deer you're trying to get in contact with this year?
Yeah. So I hunt primarily, well, I'll hunt some public land around here, but also I primarily hunt two private properties, but they're sort of private / public. Anybody can hunt on them.
Right.
They're not really closed. But they, yeah, I've certainly got, I would say four bucks that are 3.5 or better, which around here is pretty good. You know, I'm not sorting through, you know, 140s to 180s like you would be in Iowa, but you know, a 130-ish, 3 or 4 year old here is quite a trophy deer. And so, you know, I've got a couple, I think, that are in that range, and, they're fun to hunt. And, so yeah, I'm excited to get out there and chase them, and whether or not I catch up to them or not, we'll find out. But yeah, I run a lot of cameras and a lot of mobile wireless cameras, so I can just kind of keep track of what's going on. And so it's fun to chase them. That's for sure.
Yeah. So we're getting ready. As me and you talk right now, and this is going to be launched on Monday, I think the 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th, we're getting ready to enter that second stage of the rut, or the second real week of November here. And my question to you is, if you were to pick only one of those weeks, the first week or the second week to hunt PA, what would you choose?
Boy, that's tough, because I like them both for different reasons. The first week, if you've got a decent pattern on a deer, like if you have an idea of where he's bedding and where he wants to get to, you want to take advantage of that, because once you can't pattern anymore, it makes it a lot tougher. So I would say strategically, if I knew where there was a deer at, I would say that first week. But if you're someone that you're poking and hoping, basically, you're just getting out there and you want to have a chance at seeing a deer, and especially an older deer. Matter of fact, the biggest buck I ever killed, I killed what would be that week after people think of that traditional best rut time. So these are mature deer coming off of does that they may have been with for a few days and trying to find the next one.
Yeah,
that can be a fantastic time for older deer in particular.
Oh yeah. And I'll tell you, based off of my trail cameras and based off of my experience just sitting in the timber, I have captured more mature deer on trail camera and had, I guess, encounters or see them on their feet from a tree stand after the 15th of November. That next 5 days is for some reason when all the big dogs turn into the dumb 3-year-olds. And they're just nose down walking. They've all been running around chasing does for the last 2 weeks, so they're tired. They turn into those zombie deer that we like to call. And so there's definitely still hope out there for guys who haven't sealed the deal yet.
Absolutely, yeah. Stay patient out there, and you have to always tell people this. don't blow your chance because you're sitting there feeling sorry for yourself and think your odds are low. You have to assume that every minute could be the minute.
Yeah.
So it can happen.
Absolutely. Are you an all day guy?
You know what? I retired from that.
I did too, man. I did too.
The only way I would be an all day guy now is if, like, let's say I went out this morning and all of a sudden one of the deer I wanted to shoot at came in and bedded near me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't leave the stand. I'd sit there all day and wait on him. But otherwise, I find, Dan, that number one, I've had very little success in that middle part of the day over the years. I get tired. I think you really build up a real scent cone around you being in one spot for that long. And so I've just found, even if it's just to get down and grab a sandwich and move to another tree, that works better for me.
Yeah. I'll tell you, man, I am like a 3-year-old when it comes to sitting in a tree stand. I just don't have the patience. Like, if I could, and I am in control of, you know, how I hunt and where I hunt, but I rarely like to sit past 9:30-ish, 10 o'clock. If there's good deer movement, I may stay till 11, but after that, I'm done. Like, it's time to eat, it's time to move, it's time to stretch my legs. So I just don't have the patience that a lot of people have when it's time to sit all day. And like, I'm also a numbers guy, so statistics really, you're going to have your best opportunity in the morning or in the evening. And yes, people have been successful shooting these random cruiser bucks at 1 o'clock or noon, you know, and I guess I'm not willing to find out.
It's not worth it for that 2% chance.
Right.
I agree.
Absolutely. So, what was the other state? Delaware, right? Fill us in on this, this Delaware hunt, 'cause it looks like you found some success.
Yeah. Yeah. I killed a really good deer out there last Thursday. It was during that time we're all dealing with that stinking wave of warm weather. And of course you go out, Delaware is right on the coast. A matter of fact, I'm hunting about 15 minutes from Ocean City, Maryland.
Wow.
So you're hunting deer on the beach, and so it's always a little warmer there on top of everything else. But, poking around the swamps in there, a lot of nice older deer. I've been hunting there for a number of years now, and, was able to get in really time and thoroughly hunting in standing water. So when I say swamp out there, it's really, most of it is standing water. Probably the majority of it would be about calf high for us, but there are some deeper pools. And I was really getting right into the water because these deer weren't showing themselves in daylight. So I had to get in where they were, and I was able to get one sneaking back into his bed Thursday morning about 6:45 in the morning, and ended up with a 13-yard shot on him. Really good deer. I'll get an age on him, but he's 4 or 5 years old, 11 points. And I just rough scored him out there. I'm not a big score guy. It doesn't mean anything to me, but I was curious, and he was about 156. So
whoa.
I was really pleased. Yeah, I was really pleased with him.
Wow. The pictures look deceiving, because I'll be honest with you. I didn't think it looked that small. I knew he had some great brow tines, or that big, but I knew he had some great brow tines, but that's a stud buck, man.
Yeah, I was, like I said, I mean, it's hard to, everyone goes to the west, I go to the east. So when people were like, oh, you shot that where? And so, yeah, I mean, it's a good state. The swamp is a tough spot to hunt, and you can never get to all the deer in there. And that's why I like it. And Delaware is a very small state, so there's not a lot of opportunity. So if you have a spot, that's great. And so, yeah,
so
it was good. I loved it. It was great.
Let me ask you a little bit about that, because I don't know if I've ever talked with somebody who lives and hunts in Maryland. What attracts you to Maryland to go and hunt when there's so many other opportunities out there?
Yeah. Well, I'm actually in Delaware. So,
oh, you live in Delaware?
I live in Pennsylvania, but
okay.
Where I hunt is in Delaware, but it's pretty close to the Maryland border. So it's a couple things. Number one, it's camaraderie. I've got a good friend out there who introduced me to that type of hunting a while back. He manages some land out there, manages the swamp for his job. So he's really into habitat and conservation. And so, you know, I love the deer hunt. I love hunting bigger deer, but I also like the big picture of it. I like the management of it. I like the conservation aspect of it. And so you get all that out there. And so it's an easy drive. From where I live, about 5 hours, and it's unique. You know, I've hunted all over the country. I've been blessed that way. You know, I've done the Midwest thing. I do the Eastern Mountains thing here in Pennsylvania, and now the swamps. And it is a completely sort of different and unique style of hunting. You know, when you're hunting in the Midwest and you're in those fence rows and pinch points and you hear the leaves crunching, it gets you excited. Well, out in the swamp, you hear water splashing. And I got to tell you, it makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck.
I feel you.
You have no idea what's going to come wandering out of that swamp. And that was kind of the case for me on Thursday. You hear the water splash and you look out and you see a lot of antlers coming your way.
Yeah. So is there any terrain features like hills or drainages or ridges, or is it mostly just like flatness?
Yeah, I'm smiling as you ask that question, because the first couple of years I hunted out there, my friend Ron, he would talk about hunting the ridge. And so I'm like, there is no ridge within 100 miles of here. But a ridge, yeah, not like ridges like we have in Pennsylvania.
Right.
And so anyway, a ridge out there would literally be a 2-foot elevation change. Yeah, because you're at sea level. So you have all this standing water, and then you have these, what they refer to as ridges. And, you know, in a deer's world, it's kind of the perfect environment, because they trudge through that water and they just find a few little high spots to bed on. There's no way a predator, human or otherwise, can get in on them without them knowing.
Right.
So it's a pretty unique environment.
So then when it comes to where these deer are living, you know, they're walking through standing water, but are they bedding on little knolls or on edges that are dry, or what's their daily routine? What are they eating? What are they doing?
So there's a lot of agriculture out there. So people, I'm not sure when you tell someone, tell me what you think of when you hear Delaware, they might say chicken farming, but it literally, Dan, if I took you out in the middle of Delaware and didn't tell you where I was taking you and took off your blindfold, you would probably tell me you were in the Midwest somewhere.
Okay.
A lot of agriculture, smaller woodlots, a lot of fence rows. So you got corn, soybeans. Where we hunt, there's a couple of sizable grain farms nearby, so that they're going out there to feed for the most part. And then there's, you know, there's oaks and whatnot in the swamp too. So a lot of food in there. They're still going out and hitting the ag. And then they got a little bit of feed interior. And as far as bedding goes, anywhere there's a tree or a group of trees, there's a little bit of high ground there. And so the deer will get in and bed on those pieces of high ground. And as a matter of fact, the tree I decided to climb in, when the sun started coming up, I looked below me and saw there was a fresh bed right under me. It almost makes me wonder, as close as that buck got, if that might not have been his bed.
Yeah.
And so it's just sort of the kind of hitting the lottery, I guess, more than anything else.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. As much as I like big, mature bucks, I also like new experiences. And that's part of the reason why I liked, going to Michigan so much, is because it was a different experience. And, one of these days I may have to get out there and try some of this East Coast hunting. And I mean, on the coast type hunting. I got another guy who's been on the podcast from, New Jersey, and he hunts relatively close to the ocean. And, you know, like in retrospect to everybody on the East Coast is like within 100 miles from the ocean. Right. So, just a real interesting type terrain, real interesting. Just, I don't know. I wonder if there are any bow hunters out there who actually have a tree stand set up on a beach that overlooks the Atlantic Ocean.
there probably is somebody, and that would be a pretty cool setup.
Right.
Watch
the waves crash and stuff.
Exactly. No, and I've followed every step of the way on your Michigan trip and how you talked about it. And it's been really good, because I think you are, through your experience, you've been able to tell a lot of other hunters some of the things that that I tell people, obviously without the audience, but it's a very different world.
Right.
The deer hunting that you do in Iowa, that I used to do in Ohio, versus the deer hunting we do in Pennsylvania and Michigan and a number of other high pressure states. So
right.
I think it's been good for people to hear that.
Absolutely. That's a fact, man. So Nick, you're the CEO of the merged QDMA and National Deer Alliance organization. So, and recently you guys, over the last however many months, you guys have been together coming up with the idea for the new names. It sounds like you have one now. So why don't you let everybody know what the name of this new organization is, and what you guys have been doing, and what are some of the things that you are looking to accomplish in the next, months or year or whatever?
Yeah, we've been very hard at it. You had us on the show a while back. We first announced that we were doing this merger, and on November 10th, we announced the name, which is the National Deer Association. You know that we've bounced a number of names off of people. I had sent a few to you and asked for your input, which I appreciate. And in the end, when we picked this one, we knew it wasn't going to be a big, sort of sexy name. But at the end of the day, it's a solid name, and it really depicts credible on Capitol Hill, and we have to have a name that's credible for guys that are out, going out and climbing up in trees right now. And so the National Deer Association is it, and that's the name going forward. So we're excited to launch that. If you haven't been there yet, you can go to our website, deerassociation.com, and it has all of the details. It has our new board members on there in the bios, staff, some of the initiatives that we're going to be working on. And so, yeah, the big rollout was a couple of days ago.
Awesome. So as far as, the name, right? Because I'm sure there's people out there on any type of campaign where you're merging or you're coming up with a new name or you're rebranding. There are a lot of people who used to follow the National Deer Alliance and used to follow the QDMA. Now you guys are all under one roof under this new brand, this new name. What are you guys doing to spread the message that, hey, we are this now?
I think we're trying to do it with every bit of communication that we do. There's a work ahead of us, and one thing we can't do is make time go faster. So despite what we say, people are going to have to see us in action and understand kind of what we're doing. And so the one nice thing is it's not that we're eliminating any aspect of QDMA or any aspect of the National Deer Alliance. All we've done is brought those together. So we're still very heavy in policy. And so we've been communicating a lot about policy, things we're doing that, frankly, most deer hunters, they want to know someone's working on it, but they don't want to really care about it themselves too much. So we're doing that.
Okay.
Conservation. Yeah, our conservation work. I would say that's probably the biggest swing, is that we're not just a quality deer management organization anymore. We still absolutely want to help people manage their land. We'll still be on the forefront of providing education and outreach. And so we're not walking away from that at all. We're just broadening our conservation mission and making any deer hunter, regardless of what you want to shoot at or how you want to hunt, you're welcome under our roof, because we need everybody going forward. So that's the message. And we're hoping to be able to really prove that over time.
Okay. So, I think the last time that we talked about short-term and long-term goals for the new organization. Have you guys already started some of those processes, or getting the ball rolling on some of that stuff? And has any of those short-term or long-term goals or strategies changed?
No, I mean, I think we started immediately with strategic planning, which I think was a wise move. And so the things that we talked about the last time I was on the show that would be important to us have really remained the same. And in fact, we've, through this planning process, have been able to really solidify some of the things we want to do, put some real goals behind them. So, again, it's the education and outreach. It's the policy work. It's working with on deer diseases. We're still going to be very much in the forefront of CWD, for example. Our Field to Fork program, getting more deer hunters or more hunters into the woods. That's been an extremely successful program. We're going to certainly invest in that pretty heavily. So those are the focus areas. And so the short term, I think just getting it on paper and getting the team functioning well together, we're doing that. The team has just been, that's been easy, frankly. Okay. Now some of the longer term will be, like you'd said before, we have to prove ourselves a little bit. We have to get people to consider joining us that maybe never were a member of the National Deer Alliance or QDMA. And so that's some of the stuff we're hoping to pull off here in the longer term.
Okay. So what message do you want to share to those people who, I guess, haven't become a member of QDMA in the past or followed the NDA for free, right? I think the last time we talked, you mentioned there's going to be a small fee involved for a membership to this organization. What message do you want to share to those people who are considering, you know, possibly joining or don't even know about you yet?
I mean, I think number one, we really see ourselves as the premier and leading deer organization in the country when it comes to what we do on the ground for deer and hunters. We are not what some people had. I think with QDMA, one of the challenges that always been is that there was a percentage of hunters that viewed them as sort of a trophy deer organization, or you had to own land to be a member. They never really were that organization, but they kind of got that tag. Well, this transition really gives us a chance to perfect our messaging and be a little bit louder about the fact that we're a conservation group, period.
Yeah.
And deer are the biggest piece of the pie. They generate the most money for all conservation, not just deer. So if you're someone that, even if you're a bird hunter, or maybe you're someone that just likes to look at birds out your window, well, something has to pay for the management of all that wildlife, and deer really are the bulk of it. And so we're a conservation organization. We'll help people manage who want to manage. But we're also every bit as interested in the person that just wants to learn how to hunt and who wants to fill their freezer, because we need licensed buyers. We need healthy deer herds, and it just makes the whole conservation world go around.
Right. So I have a question. It's not 100% deer related, but in a way it is. And the question is, I think recently in New Jersey, there's been a statewide ban on deer hunting, on bear hunting, right? So
yep.
there was this ban, then a whole bunch of bear hunters got together. They brought some facts and some science to the table. It was disregarded, and the ban has now continued, right? So when I see something like that, I say to myself, Jesus, man, like, what's next? Deer hunting? Are people going to come after my right to deer hunt? Or, I mean, and at the same time, I shouldn't even think like that. I should think like, these people are doing nothing wrong. They just want to bear hunt. The science says you should bear hunt to control the population. But the politicians, the group behind the politicians say, No bear hunting. So my question to you in a weird way is, should I be worried that somebody who is completely uneducated on deer hunting is going to try to stop deer hunting?
Yeah, I wish I could give you a different answer on this, Dan, but absolutely. Everybody should be concerned. And I don't say that as someone who has a membership organization that's trying to scare people. Because the example you just gave is reality. That's real life. There are other states in the country you can't hunt predators. You can't hunt other things. And so or the ways that you hunt are limited. That can happen to deer hunting. As a matter of fact, there are municipalities across the country and jurisdictions that don't allow deer hunting. So it already exists out there. This is a big part of what we want to do going forward, Dan. And I might've said this on your show when we talked a while back, and that is, I think we're doing things right when we have people join our organization that actually don't even have any intention of shooting a deer, but they do understand what the value of deer are to conservation. And they understand that without hunters and without deer conservation, it's going to be hard to manage any wildlife. And I think that the average person, you know, some of the people that would maybe support the governor in New Jersey by not allowing bear hunting, a lot of it is, I think, just because they're not educated. And it's just sort of the hoopla they fall victim to. Well, I think it's our job to educate people about deer hunting and to say, listen, for you, you may never go out and shoot a deer or want to hunt a deer, but here's why it's important. And we've never as a community really told that story. We've always just focused mostly on the people that want to hunt or just like us. And we think we need to focus on the people that are less like us to get that message out there, to get so that the overwhelming majority of the people, which they do say they support hunting. Okay. But then you have these situations where on bears in particular, well, they're cute and cuddly and you're shooting Yogi Bear, and then all of a sudden they get conflicted. Yeah. So the messaging is important. We need a movement for deer, period, whether you hunt them or not.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. It's like, I just get really frustrated, especially watching the news, watching the election, watching all this, the craziness that 2020 has brought us. It just seems that people are so set in their ways that they don't even want to hear the truth anymore. They are blinded by something and they're just like, nope, not going to care. I don't care what you say. I've already made up my mind, and you know, and that's a two-way street, right? But I feel like when it comes to conservation and when it comes to hunting in general, it's just not one big push is going to knock down the tree, but every little axe swing and every little axe swing, and then they add up and they add up until someday they have enough momentum behind them where it just all falls. And then all of a sudden, all these people who have done nothing are causing a huge uproar. And we've been trying to communicate that message to them for years and years and years. And all of a sudden, in a blink of an eye, it can be gone.
Yeah, this is an unhealthy time in terms of people not being open-minded.
Yeah.
We're not all that different in age, but I'm sure you and I can both remember times where you didn't even know the politics of your neighbor. And if you did, if anyone ever did say anything, like, that was crazy old, you know, Bob down the street who was this or that, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's different now with social media and whatnot. And like you said, we'll take the politics out of it. We'll just look at science. People will now not even accept black and white science, good peer-reviewed science, if it doesn't meet with what they want to believe. So people are willing to create alternative facts in their mind because it makes them feel better. But the reality is it's not real. And that's what we face with conservation. It's way more about the political science now than it is the biological science. And that's unfortunate, but that's why we focus so heavily on policy.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's just for a moment, you've been to Washington, D.C. You've sat in front of politicians and you have talked this message about the importance of deer hunting, even CWD and all this stuff. What is the general attitude of, I don't know if you've talked to Congress or you've talked to the Senate or to the House of, you know, representatives, but what is the overall feel of the politicians and their constituents towards hunting in general?
Yeah, and so I would say in general, there's just a lack of education or a lack of knowledge. So I've testified in front of two congressional committees, and both times it was on chronic wasting disease. And so some of the questions you may get in these hearings are kind of baffling, right? It just tells you how far or how uneducated or unaware some of these decision makers are on these issues. And so whether it be our organization, we have some partners that work really hard that also help try to all the major, you think of the major conservation groups out there that we partner with them to try to help educate decision makers on these issues, because at the end of the day, we need them. We need them to come up with bills and funding to help us do the work that we need to do. So I would say the general, it's less about whether or not they support or oppose hunting. And it's just more about most of them don't know hardly anything about any of it. And yeah, that's kind of scary.
Yeah. And that's your job to educate them, right, my friend?
Us along with a number of our friends. Yes. All yeah. of us, frankly, you know, it's everybody listening here. It's all yeah. of our job.
That's a good point. Good point. Well, my friend, I think I mentioned that I wanted to keep this somewhat short. Is there any other information about the new organization that you want to get out there? Where to contact you, how to contact you, where to find more information about the new org? This is your time to do or say whatever you want.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the exposure here, Dan. And I would just tell people the best thing to do is go to deerassociation.com. Our communications team did a fabulous job of spelling it all out right there. Everything from questions and answers to, like I said, you get to meet who's on our board and learn about some of our directives. It's all right there. Check it out. And then the only other thing I would say is we're running a new member special right now. So if you haven't joined before, now's a great time to do it. It's $25. So check that out too. And we've had a really great response to that. So join us, be part of the movement here, and you know, help us do the job that I think we're all responsible for.
Sounds good, my friend. Well, Nick, thank you for taking time out of your day, and good luck in the PA woods, man.
All right. Thank you, Dan. Good talking to you.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Huge shout out to Nick for taking time out of his day. Please go check out this new organization. I really appreciate you guys for tuning in and listening, although this isn't, you know, a strategy type episode, but I think it's very important because at the end of the day, we need to start giving back just a little bit more. And that's up to you on what you do. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to be a part of this new organization. This is just one way to give back, and it's on you. It's on us, really. It's on all of us to give back so that future generations have the availability and the opportunity to do what we do. And that's why we share our passion with our children and the new hunters and young hunters. And so there's that. Huge shout out to all the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles, The Average Conservationist, Vortex Optics, Ozonix, Wasp, and Lone Wolf Tree Stands. Please go out and support the companies that support this podcast. And I'll tell you right now, each one of those products that I just ripped off, or brands that I just ripped off, make some really kick-ass products that are functional in the woods. And I'm not going to say they're going to help you shoot a big buck, because that's impossible, but they make decision-making easier. They make your efficiency from the truck to the timber easier, and just some really kick-ass products, man. And I don't know. I like to use them. But other than that, guys, really appreciate your time. Thank you very much. Be sure to subscribe to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. Be sure to follow me on Instagram and Facebook. And other than that, man, hopefully you guys are finding success in the timber. If not, get your butt in a tree stand or a ground blind. It's almost gun season, so get prepared for your gun seasons. And, man, good luck, and we'll talk to you later.